Now, Trader's race was damned near run. Whatever happened up in the topmost trails of the Darks, it would mean an ending of the old ways of life that had been his ways for over 10 years.
You look like a prickless mutie in a gaudy house, Ryan.
Guess Trader's sickness has really gotten to me. He was almost like a father, if that don't make me sound like a stoop.
You don't sound like a stoop. I've only known the Trader a short while, but he's something special.
The smell of cooking stew came on the breeze to them.
Hungry?
As Ryan asked the question, he turned his head quickly, finding that Christy was sitting closer than he'd thought. So close that their noses almost touched, and her veil of crimson hair brushed lightly against his cheek. Her green eyes drilled into him, and she half opened her mouth, saying nothing. Despite the cool of the evening, Ryan was perspiring. It was utterly inevitable that they should kiss, and having kissed, should kiss again and again. His hand was holding the back of her neck, and her hair seemed almost to caress his fingers. His tongue thrust between her parted lips, and her sharp teeth nipped him so gently. His right hand slipped down the rough material of her overalls, finding the zipper, lowering it in a whisper of movement. He felt the warm swell of her breast as his palm cupped it, and the nipple hardened. Her own hands were delving under the long coat, but the wealth of guns and the panga hindered her from reaching and touching him.
Ryan, please, can...
Where? In the war wag?
No, not in there. Out here where you can breathe free. Over there in those trees beyond the river.
Caution, and the memory of those odd totemic warning signs made him hesitate. But his desire overcame all resistance, and he took her by the hand, and they walked together, jumping a narrow brook, finding a space of cropped grass alongside a quiet pond. Trees hid them from the war wag, and the gathering darkness kept their secret. It was too cold for them to strip, but she wiggled out of the overalls, and he pulled off the dark gray denim trousers, laying the lapa ready to hand. They were both desperate enough not to waste time on any preliminaries, and he rolled on top while she guided him into her. Ryan penetrated her, thrusting, feeling her moistness and heat close around him. She locked her heels in the small of his back, drawing him deeper, pushing up with her hips at his steel-hard maleness. They reached a juddering simultaneous climax, and he lay down on her, his face buried in her neck, panting as if he had run a long-distance race across broken ground. She touched him on the side of the face, kissing him with an infinite tenderness.
That was so good, Ryan. So good that I'd like to do it again.
The second time, later, in the velvet blackness of the forest, was slower. They explored each other's body with fingers and lips, touching and arousing each other. Finally, he lay back, the short grass prickling his buttocks as she straddled him, lowering herself teasingly slowly, so that the tip of his erect penis touched and entered, and then withdrew, until she smiled and enveloped him, throwing her head back as she pumped and rose and fell. The girl's mouth opened, and she sighed with the pleasure of their lovemaking, her teeth white as wind-washed bone in the twilight. The second orgasm was without the hurry of the first, and for many minutes after, they lay tangled in each other's arms. The night's cold stole over them, and eventually they broke apart and pulled on their clothes.
They'll be looking for us.
Not if they guess that we... Look, there, beyond that fallen tree.
Ryan followed her finger, reaching for the pistol, then checking the movement. Some 100 paces away from them, only a smudge of light against the dark trees, he saw a man, standing silently watching them.
Who is he?
Looks like a mutie.
The man was old, and as Ryan's eye adjusted to the night, he could make him out more clearly. Barely medium height, with silver-white hair tied in 2 long braids, each with a scrap of red ribbon knotting it at the end. He wore a robe of some kind of animal hide, and it was decorated with a staggeringly complex design in multi-hued threads and silks. His face was dark, the eyes hidden in the deep sockets. In the hair was a single feather, white as fresh snow. Even as they watched him, the old man moved back a couple of paces, and then vanished among the pines behind him. It was done with great grace. Suddenly, the space where he had been was empty.
Going after him?
No. Could be a trap. Maybe he's the one who put the signs up, warning us to stay away.
They moved fast, back to the safety of the war wag. Ryan's hand never left the butt of the automatic. Nobody said anything about their absence, although Ryan caught Hunniker giving a sly wink to Samantha. In the morning, he was gone. The only person who had seen him leave was Abe, who had been on guard on the riverside of the war wag. Everyone gathered around the lanky man as he reported to J.B. and Ryan Cotter just after dawn.
No warning, but he was behind me. I turned, and he passed me on the shoulder like he did when you done something real good, you know what I mean? I says to him, like, how's he doing? And he says he's never better.
What was he wearing?
Usual, carrying that old Armalite of his. Stepping good, not stooped like he's been. No cough. Looks past me to the trees and the snow up beyond. Real cold. I see his breath pluming out. Says he's going for a walk, and not to take on if he's gone for a while. That was about 3, maybe 4 hours back. He sure looked pretty good to me. I mean, up and walking tall.
You say anything at all apart from that?
No, but he did say there was a letter for you. Said he got a scribbler to write it weeks back when he was on the road to Moxon.
Damn his stubborn ass. I better go find that letter.
Ryan?
Yeah?
There's one other thing, Ryan, but, it's kind of stupid.
Go on.
No, maybe in a while. I gotta think on it some. Go read your note.
It didn't take long to find the letter. It was on the steel table in the corner of the trader's cabin. The edges of the handmade paper were crinkled. The letter was stained with machine oil and what looked like ketchup smeared over the bottom half. Because of his own illiteracy, the trader had been forced to get a writer to produce the note for him. It read,
Hi, Ryan. If you're reading this, then it means I'm dead. This rad cancer's been eating my guts for months, and I know there's no stopping it. So this is me saying goodbye, and the best of luck. If it goes the way I hope, I'll just walk away one night. So don't you blasted come after me. Please. That's the traitor asking, and not ordering, Ryan, old friend. We've been some places, and done some good and bad things. Now it's done. That's all. I thank you for watching my back for so many years. You and JB, watch out for each other.
There was no signature. So he'd done it. Ended his life in the same quietly efficient way he'd run it. Minutes later, as Ryan walked through the war wag, he encountered several of the women and some of the men, red-eyed. Samantha was weeping on the shoulder of Hennings. Rintoul was clicking his fingers in a nervous, abstracted way, and Finnegan's usual good nature had vanished.
Break this up. Traitor went as he wanted. Save your sorrow.
Outside, in the freshness of morning, the rising sun was tipping the hills to the west, turning the snow to blood. Abe was sitting on the ground, nursing his own M16 rifle, gazing out across the river toward the forest.
Tell me, Abe.
What?
What you were going to tell me. Something that the traitor said or did. At the last?
No, it wasn't like that. I told you all he said, and he just walked off.
Then what?
I thought I saw something there, just by that ridge of light rock over toward where that pond lies.
Ryan followed the man's stubby finger, seeing that he was pointing in the general direction of where he and Christy had made love the previous evening.
This was before Traitor went, or after?
Like after. I seen him walking away, and there was a good moon up, so he showed clear. I watched, and then I saw this thing up there like it was waiting for the traitor. First I figured he...
It was a man?
I'm telling you, Ryan. I figured he might be one of the muties that done the feathers and the skulls and stuff, so I'd get a bead on him, ready to ice him. Then I see the traitor lift a hand to him, and this old man lifts a hand back. They meet up and go under the trees. That's all I see. No danger, so I don't raise a warning for everyone. And the traitor, he don't come back.
Tell me about this man, this old man, you said. What was he like?
Well, he had silver hair and braids, one on each side, and a long coat with some fancy patterns on it.
Anything else?
Yeah. I saw it through the scope and the moonlight. In his hair, the old man had a long white feather.
Nobody ever saw the old man with the white feather in his hair, nor was the traitor ever seen again. The roads high in the darks were as bad as anything any of them had ever seen. Bucketing ribbons of twisted concrete vanished into rivers and never came out again. Whole slabs of the hillsides had melted during earth tremors a century ago. They were looking for the remains of a township shown on their tattered maps as Bab, but the devastation was so total that they had little hope of finding it. The greater the elevation, the slower their progress. The farther they went, the worse the weather became. The night skies clouded over, and the fearsome chem clouds of nuclear detritus billowed about them, with incandescent bursts of flame searing the tops of the peaks. The great northerly winds came screeching in from the desert wastes that had once been the fruitful prairies of Canada. It took them 4 grindingly oppressive days to get close to the tree line, finding that great fires had raged through the pine forests, stripping the land, leaving the soil to be eroded to bare rock and ice. The dials in the Warwag showed a daytime high of minus 10 Celsius, with the night temperatures dropping fast to minus 30. Ryan was dozing in his bunk when a particularly vicious jolt woke him. He was on his way to the control room before Chez started calling him over the intercom. JB was there before him.
End of the line.
Ryan looked out the front screen, seeing only gray ice and swirling snow. The road, if there was one there at all, was invisible.
Not even the Warwag can get us farther. The trail's gotten way too narrow. Looks like one track in and the same one out. So, there's no point going back and trying some other way.
How far from where the redoubt might be?
To have come all this way and fail so near to their destination only added to the concern he already felt about their supplies. Gas would be running low in about a week, and way up here in the darks, there wouldn't be caches hidden away for them. The trader had made sure that, throughout the Deathlands, there were plenty of such caches, buried deep and safe, but not this far north, into the blighted country. Cone, hunched over his mapping table, turned to Ryan.
Way I see it, from what you said and the redhead said, and most of all from what that poor bastard Kurt said, it should be ahead about a day's climb. Someplace.
That's a lot of nuke blasted help, Cone. What the hell does someplace mean?
Sorry, Ryan, just that my map's all worn and patched. Looks like Grinning Glacier, best I can see. Steep trail over where a lake used to be. Who knows what's there now?
Time our feet earned their living, Ryan. Let's go talk.
10. That was the final number for the party, reached after better than an hour of discussion. JB had wanted to keep it smaller, but Ryan had pushed for more to be included. And both of them wanted to come on the expedition, insisting that the other should remain in charge of the Warwag. In the end, it was Cone, the most experienced member of the unit, who was delegated to take command, while Ryan and JB both led the trek toward... toward what? Christy had to come, and so Ryan insisted did Doc. Whatever there might be up behind the fog with teeth and claws, Doc seemed to know something about it. And something was all they had. The remainder of their team were Hunniker, Cole, Hennings, Abe, the man called Finnegan, and a top blaster, Oki. She was a tall, silent girl whose skill with any firearm was legendary on the Warwag. Cone's orders were simple and explicit.
Keep in radio contact. 24-hour watch on the emergency frequency. 4 guards out, turn and turn about each hour. Full alert all the time. Keep her locked up tighter than a baron's cred chest. If we're back, then we'll be here in 4 days. Call it a flat 100 hours. Unless you hear from us to abort this command, after 100 hours precise, you push the boot to the floor and give her the gas and get out. From then on, you're on your own.
What about a relief party?
There won't be one, you stupid bastard. 100 hours and we're not back. You go.
Where?
Watch my lips, Cone. We go, you stay. We come back in less than 100 hours, all fine. If not, then Warwag 1 is yours. And you'll be low on gas and supplies, so get out fast. Now just nod your head if you understand.
Sure, that's fine. I'll be here like you say. And if there's problems, call it in.
Each member of the team carried a pistol and rifle of their own choice. Each carried 4 grenades on the belts, a mix of incendiary, stun, implosion, high X, shrap, nerve gas, and smoke. They carried enough food for 5 days, with a small supply of water pure tabs. Ammunition supplied most of the weight to their packs, along with a radio operated by Hen. No spare clothes or sleeping gear. There was no room for that kind of comfort. They agreed that the best time to leave was around dawn the next day. Cole was designated to take charge of Doc, whose mind still vacillated between extremes of brief clarity and long spells of catatonic madness. His only response when Ryan Cotter told him that they were planning on going toward the hidden redoubt was to smile and bow, his hat nearly falling off. Christie had managed to sew some strong, elasticized cord for him to use on the hat when they ventured outside into the gales. He'd refused any helmet or goggles like the others, saying that a scarf for his throat would suffice.
I believe I will be outfitted respectably. Now, Mr. Cotter, what about the guard dog?
What dog? You mean the fog, Doc?
No, I speak of the canine deterrent. Ah, what memories that word brings back to me, Mr. Cotter.
What memories?
Sadly, that has escaped me, sir. But I believe there was something about a dog.
That night, Christie came to Ryan in his bunk, and they managed, despite the tightness of the accommodation, to make slow, tender love three times before Reveille finally woke them. Farewells were short and formal. During the years that Ryan Cotter had ridden with the trader, he had seen literally dozens of relationships formed and broken in the War Wag. Many formed from loneliness and fear. Many were broken by death.
What's the weather, Cone?
Minus 15, wind about 50, from north, veering east, some hail in it.
Sounds like a fine day for a short walk in the docks. Be seeing you, Cone.
Good luck, Ryan. Give the bastards broken teeth.
The two men shook hands, and the main entry port slid open, letting in a flurry of snow and a biting wind. Ryan pulled up his goggles and exited with a jump, waving for the others to follow him. While he waited, he glanced down. Between his feet, in a small hollow sheltered among some scattered pebbles, he noticed a tiny bunch of flowers. White petals, with a heart yellow as butter. Surviving in one of the least hospitable places on Earth. For a reason that he couldn't explain, the sight of the frail plant lifted his spirits. He took a quick finger count to make sure the group was all there. 9, with J.B. Dix bringing up the rear as 10. After 50 paces, Ryan turned around, bracing himself against the driving gale, squinting back at where he knew the War Wag was, but it had already disappeared in the general whiteout. Without a compass, he knew that they had absolutely no chance of ever finding it again. The track was very rough, often barely visible, and the weather was worse than he had anticipated. But after a half hour, they rounded the massive corner of an overhanging bluff, and the wind dropped dramatically.
Way Kurt called it. There's a half-day's walk to get to where the fog was waiting.
I'm of the decided opinion that the fog will still be here and waiting for all comers, Mr. Cotter.
You know that?
It is an axiom of some veracity that a good guard dog never sleeps. Cerberus was assuredly of the best, Mr. Dix.
Every piece cocked, round under the pin. Fingers...
on triggers. We know that, Ryan.
They went on. The road, if that's what it had once been, wound and twisted like a broken-backed adder, clinging to the edge of the ice-sheeted cliffs, a dizzy abyss plunging away to their left. At one bend, Ryan held up a gloved fist, halting the party, then waved them forward to where he stood. He pointed to where the tumbling waters of a river in flood tore over gray boulders.
What do you see?
Look carefully. Through the gusting clouds of snow. There.
J.B. spied the red and brown metal bones of several vehicles. Torn and twisted, spotted with ice and blown spume. It was impossible to make out what they might once have been, but there could have been 3 or 4 of them.
Someone didn't make the turn.
Dolfo Kaler, maybe. Kurt talked about broken trucks and all. They're what's left of Kaler's expedition after the redoubt up here.
Which means the fog that has teeth and claws is around just a couple more corners.
She was nearly right. It was only one corner. It waited, quiet and immense. As Ryan cautiously waved the others forward to his side, the words of Doc came back to him. It was like some gigantic, patient guard dog. Crouched on the rutted surface of the track, among the snow-filled pits and hollows, it throbbed.
There is Cerberus.
Behind them, the wind still howled, and the air was still filled with needled chips of ice. But on this stretch, the wind was gone, echoing behind them, but not before. Here, it was preternaturally quiet. Ryan gazed at it, filled with an awe that came close to fear. In all his life, he had never seen anything like it. The fog squatted on the road, at least the forward part of it did, and behind, it rose vastly above them until it merged with the sky. It was impossible for Ryan to guess its height. The fog did not move beyond a gentle rocking, pulsing movement that seemed to be generated somewhere within its enormous bulk. It looked as though a light glowed somewhere within it, like some settlement glimpsed at a great distance through mist. He took a few cautious steps toward it, and the swaying increased. The whole mass moved the equivalent paces toward him. Tendrils came creeping from its base, edging along the road in his direction. They stopped moving as he did. Hunniker threw back her hood, ice gathering immediately on her short green hair.
Let me waste this shit with my rifle!
Immediately the fog reacted, swooping with its sinuous fingers down toward them, sending them all scurrying quickly back along the trail, back toward the bend. The fog reached to within a few steps of where Hunniker had been standing, then seemed to gather itself together and resume its previous condition, swaying smugly within.
If I might proffer a small suggestion, Miss Hunniker?
What? Like don't make any fucking noise or threaten it or even go close to it?
Those were my thoughts, dear lady. Those were indeed my very thoughts. Brava!
When it had just been Kurt's ravings, or the cryptic words of Christy and Doc, the fog had not seemed as if it would be such a problem. Ryan had somehow thought that they'd walk through it or climb around it. He'd been confident that once he saw it, assuming it really existed, it would just be a minor problem like hundreds of others, and with an easy solution. Now that he stood so close to it, he realized that this was in fact a primal force that functioned in ways of which he had no concept. Ryan unzipped his coat. Despite the ice and the bitter wind, he found that he was sweating freely.
Now what?
Who knows?
Anyone? How about you, Doc? You know about this bitching thing?
Not to put too fine a point upon it, young man, but I am as much in the dark as you. I believe this is here to keep malefactors away from the redoubt and the gate.
Gate?
Pardon?
You said something about a gate.
Did I?
Forget it, Doc. I'll ask about it later. If there is a later.
We could try some grenades.
Could do. Gotta think first. No other trail. Not one that we could ever hope to find. It's this or nothing. And there's no way under it. It hangs over the edge of that sheer cliff. There's no way over it, so... So you want to know what I think? I think one of the barons out east's got him a chopper. We just had that.
If we had a balloon, we could float up and over it. But we don't.
So they tried grenades. High X and incendiary seemed the best bets. No point in wasting shrap or nerve against a fog. The hand bombs made a load of noise and some fire. The flames seemed muffled by the fog, and the high X did nothing at all that anyone could make out. Some rocks and ice from high above them came rolling down, pattering on the road. The fog retreated about as far as a man could spit, then came back. Back toward them, stopping at the bend of the trail, becoming a huge wall, almost as if it had been cut clean with a giant's cleaver. Doc sat down, drawn and pale, looking as though the confrontation with the fog had exhausted him. He felt Ryan's eye on him and clambered up, pulling himself to a standing position with his hands on the rock face.
My apologies, sir, but all the noise and fire has quite... Antimatter, Mr. Cawdor. I believe that might do the trick. Implode, and the foul fiend will be undone. It will separate from its source.
Holy shit. Implosion grenade. Turn that chiller inside out. Yeah. Call?
What?
You got the implo?
Yeah. A couple.
Go hurl them into the middle of that bastard fog. Right in. Far as you can throw.
Sure. You got the best arm, Cole. Go close as you can, then get the hell out of there.
Cole lowered his hood, wiping tiny gems of steel gray ice from his long mustache. He unhooked the two implosion bombs with their distinctive scarlet and blue bands around their dull tops. Hunniker patted him on the arm.
Chill the fucker, Cole.
The towering mist, with a strange pale light throbbing at its center, had retreated once more until it hung precisely where they had first seen it, countless small tendrils creeping from its base as though tasting the air for the scent of an enemy. Cole crouched like a runner, readying for a sprint, a grenade in each fist. He drew in a number of deep breaths, composing himself. Ryan stood at his heels.
Not too close, Cole. No dead heroes in Warwag 1, remember?
Cole nodded his blonde head. 5 more breaths, faster and more shallow. He powered himself up the trail. For some seconds, the fog showed no sign of awareness of the threat. Then, it began to move, faster than before. Cole skidded to a halt less than 50 steps from the nearest tentacle of the fog, looking up at its shimmering bulk for a second or two, as if he was hypnotized.
Now, Cole, now!
Ryan's orders broke the spell. Cole lobbed the first of the Implo bombs into the fog. For one sickening moment, Ryan wondered if it would simply stick there, like a pebble in fresh dough, but it vanished deep within. The second one followed it, thrown with all Cole's most desperate strength.
All right, everyone. If I can ask you to step back, please. Just follow me quickly around this bend of the trail behind the rock wall here. Thank you.
Cole! Get the hell away!
The fog had sensed the threat to its existence. The tendrils had shot from its base, faster than a shooter drawing his blaster. They slapped at Cole's feet and legs before he could take more than a half dozen steps toward safety. Ryan was the last of the party to move with Doc out of sight, and he saw it all. As the first coiling arm of the fog touched Cole, sparks flew from the man's flesh. Orange and blue fire sprayed out into the cold day, as if from a welder's torch. Cole dropped his rifle and rolled onto his back, kicking. For the briefest of moments, he managed to break free from the caressing tendril. One fell across him, not hard, but more flames spat from Cole's body, at the top of his thighs, near the groin. Cole's entire body arched. Smoke and the smell of burning filtered through the crackling air. Another tendril lashed at Cole's face, and he raised his hands to take the impact, thrashing at the unknown power. Now there were a dozen or more of the thick gray tendrils enshrouding him, cording and swelling. Cole was lifted into the air by them, drawn toward the main expanse of the fog.
No!
Ryan ducked away at the familiar hollow boom, bracing himself for the bizarre sucking feeling that came from the anti-mat bombs. He and the trader had found a small supply of them years ago in a cache close to the great swamps where once the Mississippi had rolled. Nobody, not even J.B. Dix, greatest of armorers, understood what they did. All that was obvious was that they caused an implosion and matter was pulled into a vacuum of limitless smallness. Ryan looked back around the cliff immediately after the noise had faded. The fog was coiling and shredding as he watched. It seemed to be disappearing into frail towers that crumbled in on themselves. In less than a dozen heartbeats, the dreadful monster had completely gone, leaving nothing but the cold wind and driven hail.
Cerberus was a sentient creature and designed precisely thus, Mr. Cawdor. Yet it was weak precisely where it needed to be strong. Now it is gone, my dear sir, and taking that poor fellow with it, who cried so loud, did he not?
Cole had disappeared with the double implosions. At least, most of him had. His right arm, 2 fingers missing, with a shoulder and neck and much of the right side of the lower skull, still lay in the middle of the mangled roadway. The survivors walked up the trail, pausing by the remains of the corpse. The missing fingers had been sliced away as though with a razor, and the rest of the torn flesh was cleanly severed. Both eyes were gone, as was the top of the nose. The jaw had been hewn through by an unimaginable force, and the flesh of the cheek and chin was laced with a pattern of tiny burns and scorch marks. The teeth were splintered to powder in the jaw. Taking into account the massive injuries, there was very little blood.
We going to leave him here like this for the wolves and bears?
No. Can't bury him. In the river, J.B.?
Best we can do.
As gently as they could, the 2 men stooped and gathered up the remains of the man who had been one of the strongest of the crew of the Warwag, swinging the dismembered mass once, and then heaving it as far out as they could into the singing void. They watched as it fell into the river and joined the waters that flowed from the glacier way up above them. They stood mutely for several seconds. Ryan broke the spell by turning to lead them up the trail. As they walked, the fog no longer obscuring the way, he noticed a peculiar thing. On their side of the barrier, the road was in terrible condition, puckered and scratched. 100 paces or so higher up, it was in perfect condition. Smooth and flat, unbroken by the century of neglect, untouched by weeds. It went straight for a while, then curved sharply to the right, as though it ran into the face of the cliff. Neat, rectangular